because they want more pay. Buses on strike want a raise in pay, so they can help pollute the air.
Hello, Blog Talk family. This is a special show. A happy belated Thanksgiving and happy Black Friday. Today we have a co-host, if you remember, the extraordinary historian and history teacher out of Newark, New Jersey, Yvette. Yvette, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Yvette. Introduce yourself.
Hello.
Yvette, can you introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Yvette Jordan. I'm an educator in Newark. I teach history, and I'm happy to be here on Friday, Black Friday.
Excellent. Now we have your guest, your first guest today, Yvette, is Trevon. Trevon, are you on the line?
Yes.
Hi, Trevon. Okay. How are you?
I'm good.
That's great. How was your holiday?
It was good. A lot of food.
A lot of food?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Trevon, is your mom on the line with you as well?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Okay.
Okay, Katrina.
Yes.
Okay, how are you fixing? All righty. Well, I have a couple of questions for you, actually, several. I remember when you were on maybe a couple of months ago, and you talked about what it is you do. In case some of our listeners aren't familiar with that, would you share some of that with us now, please?
Yeah, my name is Trevon Mulder. I'm 14, and I have my own business, Tix Toys, which I sell to children, things like silly string, yo-yos, Christmas stockings during the winter. I also have summer-themed toys, but I also buy gifts so they can buy for their parents, too.
You buy the actual gifts?
The gifts are, like, stuff that we buy, like, when I'm out buying my merchandise, something that a child can buy for their parent for Christmas or birthdays.
Okay, that's great. How did you start it? How did it evolve? Was it your idea? Was it your mom's? How did it start?
To buy the gifts?
Well, your whole, you in business.
Me in business. When I was in fifth grade, Dr. Nunez, she has the Mind in Our Business program, came to my school and told us about how his other students have created businesses and been profitable with. So I told my mom about it, and she said I should go with the business, because I was also looking at a science camp,
mm-hmm.
but I could always go into a science camp no matter what year it is. So she told me to try the business. And while I was there during the weeks, I just learned more and more about business and then created my own.
Wow, okay. So that's great. So I guess your mom was a lot of support for you.
Yeah. She has a lot of support, like, even especially during the winter time, because I have things back to back. Like, I have something else tomorrow and other dates, but I couldn't get to none of them or have none of them if I didn't have her support.
Okay. And now, since it's been, you said you started in fifth grade, so I'm assuming you're what, a freshman now?
Yes.
Okay, so it's been 4 years. So have you seen it grow?
My business has grown, especially the number of customers I have. Also, I'm buying more product because I'm able to afford more and better quality toys and wrapping. I actually had the ability to wrap gifts and toys. When I originally started, I didn't have enough money to do that.
Okay, so I'm sure you have grown since you have some profits you can use for that. One thing we're doing on Friday is we are actually letting our listeners phone in and handing out whatever products or services our guests have. So what exactly would you have for one of our listeners? What type of a giveaway?
The type of giveaways I have are toys, like as far as spinning tops. I have yo-yos, fans, light-up toys, and many more things.
All right, so which one would you want to give away? All, if you said one of those things, what would it be?
It's, I have a large variety, so I, as far as the giveaway, I'm going to do one of each thing
okay.
that I sell.
Okay, so when we have our next caller, we'll let our caller know.
Okay.
Because I think you sent some of that in already. So we'll let our caller know they're a winner. So, callers, we're waiting on you to call in. Is your mom on the line?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Okay. I want to ask you a couple of questions as well, if that's all right.
Sure.
How have you seen your son grow through all of this?
Well, I've seen him mature. I've seen his grades get a lot better. He's always been a little bit of above average as far as the grades concerned, but within the last 2 years, he's pretty much been strictly on a roll. He's a lot more responsible.
Mm-hmm.
I see when he's in the programs that he's in, especially when he's in the Granville Academy, the business program that he's in now, you would see how his attention and his want to know about business has grown because he has his business himself. He's more involved when he's speaking to people and listening to lectures. He's a child that you see that's actually taking notes and learning how to put what he learns from other people into his business.
Okay, so then in terms of being focused, you can see
right.
that. Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay. And I guess as an educator myself, I can see when students are involved in activities, whether it's work or their own business, I realize in school, in a classroom as well, they are extremely focused. So,
right.
Yeah.
All I've noticed in school as well with his teachers, when he used to come home and tell me about, you know, what's going on in school, it would be general things. Now he tells me about conversations that he's having with the teachers outside of school, that they're even showing more interest in him as a person and not just a student. So the relationships that he has with adults, I think, has grown because of the business, because he's more comfortable speaking to adults now.
Okay, wonderful. Trevon, are you still there, right?
Yes.
Okay, I want to ask you about a Bible action figure. You have one of those?
I don't have one of them. I'm partnered with another lady. She has the toy line. She's getting a patent for it right now. She's in one of the final steps.
Okay.
And the lady's name is Miss Adrienne Dixon, and it's, her business is Train Up a Child International.
Okay. Well, that's great. That'll be a wonderful hookup for you.
Well, what I like about their relationship is she's actually starting a toy company and she's keeping it faith-based. And for my son to see her watching her build the business from start to finish is going to give him an idea in real time what really happens when you're building your business. So he gets to watch and follow her footsteps. She's actually had meetings with him, and she explains to him which steps she has to go to in order to get to that point, because it was a long time just coming just to get the patent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's real interesting to see that he gets to watch her all the way through this process.
Okay, wonderful. What about How to Train Up a Child?
Her business is giving back to her community, because
mm-hmm.
she saw while she lives in Camden that
okay.
there's a lot of violence, and some of it with the children goes back to the type of toys they play with. So
mm-hmm.
she's making action figures that have that are faith based, that come from the Bible and many other like leaders in their community.
Okay, I see. Wonderful. Callers, in case you're still there, we are accepting calls on this show for another 15, 20 minutes, actually 25 minutes. So if you want, would you please call us at 347-324-5552. All righty. We're having this all day, so there are a series of folks in business as well as other educators who will be on our show all through the day until about 6 o'clock in the evening. Are you thinking of hiring anybody else or working with any other youth in your area?
Well, in my area, there isn't that many youth businesses,
mm-hmm.
and as far as toys, there aren't any.
Okay.
The biggest toy places are Toys R Us or the national, like, based toy companies.
All righty. Well, if I had an interest, how would I reach you? Are you online? Is there an address? Or
you can reach me at my Blogspot. It's takestoys.blogspot.com. It has all the information, my phone number, if you want to, my email address. It also shows everything that I'm going to be doing the rest of the winter, like, so that it keeps you up to date of all my progress and what I've done.
All righty. And how would you spell that, a Tix Toys? Is that a T-I-X?
It's T-I-C-K-S toys.blogspot.com.
Okay, great. Thank you. And where are you vending next?
Next, I'm vending downtown Trenton at TD Bank from today at 12 to 2 o'clock.
Wait a minute. Now it's 12. So are you there?
I'm vending there from 1 to 2.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. From 1 o'clock?
Yes.
Okay. And you have a following? I'm sure you do.
After I'm finished with there, tomorrow I'm going to the Buyback a Community event in Trenton, hosted by a lady named Mimi at the Lighthouse Community and Theater on 715 Bellevue Avenue.
Okay. All righty, so I guess you're a busy guy. Who
yeah.
are your biggest supporters?
My biggest supporters, as far as business-wise, are Mr. Meaning, Mr. Kevin and Dr. Hernandez, Mr. Granville, and many other people, as far as my family, my mother, my grandmother, my grandpa, and a couple of my aunts.
Okay, that's great. Let me ask you this. I'm sure, I mean, everything you're saying is really, really positive. It's just if I was a young person out there and saying, okay, I have an idea, I have a business, and I want to make it successful, what advice would you give so that I would have less stumbling blocks along the way? Or even if you want to share a story about a hurdle or something really challenging you found in your business. So what would that be?
I'll say if you're trying to start off a business, the first thing you need to do is figure out what kind of product you want and how much it costs. Then you work out the details as far as who you're going to sell to and is there a need in your community. And then you also need good support. Like I have parents, support from my mother, and you need just a lot of support. You need to get out there, like, give out information, make sure you're known.
Okay, make sure I'm known. Now about the second part of my question, which was what challenges have you seen? Have you seen any challenges or no?
As far as challenges, it will be not having the ability to get the product I want to. Because certain things I can only get from New York, and I can't get there every single time I need to restock.
Okay.
And it's also just getting customers to come out, especially in bad weather. And so all that affects the business.
All righty. We have another caller, a caller 2573. Hello, caller. Hello, are you there? Okay, caller 2573, and that would be last four numbers and your phone number if you hit one. Okay, I guess the caller is shy. Let's move on. What about other interests you have?
As far as other interests, I love to draw. That's one of the, I've been doing that since I was little, like 3 years old.
Really?
And I still, yeah. And I also want to go to college to become a scientist.
Okay.
So science is something I like.
So when you draw, what type of things is it? You draw action figures or?
I'd like to draw people, animals. And when I draw, I don't just draw the picture. I put, like, give them a backstory. It's just something I like to do on the weekends when there's nothing for me to do on a rainy day. I also like to draw characters and make a big story out from them.
Wow, okay. That sounds interesting. So are you saving all of those? You have them in a journal?
I have them in big notepads. I have all my drawings saved at home.
Okay, well, we have, next up, we have Brother Man Comics, so will you stick around for that interview? Maybe you'll have some questions for them.
Okay.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
You're so polite. That's wonderful. Very refreshing. All righty, Leslie, I think she is there. Hello? Les?
Yeah? Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Patrina, are you online?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. I know you were in contact with the WAD, Brother Man Comics creator?
Yes, briefly, yes. Oh.
Okay, I thought that was a perfect fit, considering that you said that Trevon was also interested in graphics and drawing and things of that nature. When did you find out that he had an interest in other areas besides being a little entrepreneur?
Well, he says at age 3, but I think I remember around age 5, we bought him a big art pad, and he sat down after he watched a cartoon episode. He actually drew a whole entire picture, and when he wanted to explain it to us, he had a story. It took him at least 15 minutes to tell us our whole story from that one sheet of paper and everything we drawn so we could understand it. I mean, it wasn't like just a normal 5-year-old drawing. It was very detailed. So from that on, from that day on, my mother and I, when we bought him gifts, we would buy him books on drawing, books on, you know, how they have the airplanes and you have to construct them your own self. And then we started buying him science books. So I think his trying to keep him interested in what he likes, starting from the drawing, somehow got him into the science, the love of his science as well.
Right. So he still has those pads? Do you still draw on the side, or do you have time anymore?
All the time.
Yeah, I draw all the time. Like, just a couple of days ago, I drew, like, 2 to 3 different people and just give them a story and everything.
Okay. Have you had a chance to speak to DeWise yourself personally yet?
No, I have not yet.
Okay, well, we're looking forward to him calling in on the show while you're on the line. I'd like to hear the exchange. I think it's going to be one of a lot of excitement. And I think you're going to learn a lot, and you'll probably make a friend for life. Patrina, have you had any correspondence with DeWaz?
No, just briefly, because I was giving him information on my son, because he was interested in those types of characters. And actually, what I was trying to hook up them up to is so my son can see the different ways that he draws, because every artist has their own signature way of drawing a certain character, a certain way you shade things so you can see more detail. And I used to take Trayvon to the library and pick up those books and learn the different ways that you can make a picture stand out. So I was looking for that connection.
Okay. Now, if the three of you get together, I know you mentioned the action figure, the Bible action figure. I think the three of you could do something dynamic, being that Trayvon is the salesperson, the business side. Do you think that's a possibility? That he could forge a relationship between the Bible action figure lady and DeWaz, the Brother Man Comics creator?
Yes. Definitely. When she's doing different characters and trying to bring out the likeness of the characters, I've seen some of his work online, so that would definitely be a nice connection.
Yeah, I think it would be. So anything that you want to particularly ask DeWaz, you know, when he gets back, about, you know, your business aspect. Now let's create this scenario that you're in your boardroom of your corporation, Trayvon. What would you say to DeWaz if he came into your boardroom with his comic books? And your mom, she's right there. She's part of your business. So help him answer the question, Katrina.
Okay. First question I might ask is, why did he see a need for black heroes? And then while he was developing them, like, how long did it take from getting the idea to publishing and having the actual comic book out and on stands? Then there will also be, I'll ask him what type of, who is he targeting? Because I've seen a lot of comic books. Some are based for little kids, some are for teenagers, and some are even for adults. So that's something else I would want to know.
Okay, great. It's Yvette. I'm back. So one thing I want to know, and I'm sure you'll follow up with some of those questions more after he is on, is just as a teacher in a high school, and I've also been in younger grades as well, middle school, I want to know if you've ever gone out and spoken about what it is you do with other youth. Have you done that? Maybe
yes.
Where? And how did it go?
I've spoken in a lot of places. Especially at schools with the Mind Our Business program in Granville, I would tell the children the experiences I've had with business and all the things that I've done and how it helps you along in the future, because it gives you an advantage in school. Because while I'm in high school now, the stuff I learned from the programs years back, I know now, so it gives me an advantage, and I'm be able to get A's, and it just helps a lot.
Okay. So there was interest also from them?
There was interest. They asked a lot of questions, like just about the experiences I had, and they also asked about the business aspect and also the profits and the revenue.
Yeah, I'm sure. Revenue, I'm sure they asked about that. How much money you make? How much money you make?
Yeah.
They asked a whole lot of questions about that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay. Well, when we're on next in the next half an hour, and how long will you stay? For the entire half an hour with them?
Yes.
What do you think you could give? Oh, okay, wonderful. So, do you have some of your own ideas and questions all lined up for him?
Yes.
Okay. All righty. What other animators
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Oh, excuse me. I think I'm catching a cold. What other animators have you read or seen or liked, or authors, or is it just a comic book you have interest in?
I have interest in a lot of different comic books, the ones that, like, Marvel make, and there's also Japanese-based comic books, like as Naruto and many more.
Okay. So, Mom, what about you when you've heard your son and asking other students or out there speaking, or other parents also approaching you and asking you certain questions?
Yes, the parents come and basically say, you know, they're surprised that he knows so much about what he's talking about and what am I doing, what did I hear, how did I hear about the programs. I was kind of surprised because I moved to New Jersey from Pennsylvania, and I was surprised that so many people from this area was asking me about his programs when they're here in Trenton, New Jersey. The people from Trenton, New Jersey didn't even know about some of the programs that are going on in New Jersey, and I was surprised about that.
Really?
Yes, okay. That was really surprising. Even some of my family members, they've heard of some of the things, but they really didn't know what it was about until he got into them and started doing so well.
Well, that's interesting. I see we have a couple of other callers. Callers, are you there? A caller, 8208, last four numbers, 8208. Are you there? Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi, caller. You have a question?
No, ma'am. I'm just listening in.
Okay.
Tracy.
All righty. Well, thank you for listening in. I guess we'll chat in about another 30 minutes. So.
I called too early. I'm sorry.
No problem. So caller 0347, are you there? Hello? Hello, caller 0347. Okay, I can't hear that individual either. All righty. Well, it is almost time for a brother.
Hello.
Comics. Is he? Hello.
Hi, I'm sorry, Yvette. This is Leslie. 404, are you on the line? 404, are you on the telephone? Can you hear us? All right, you're just a listener? All right, we'll put you back on
mute. This is a weird show.
Okay.
This confusion, no one knows what's going on.
Excuse me?
Okay, who is... No, they have a bad connection. I think they got a real bad phone. All I hear is static. 954?
Disconnect. That's who you disconnect. All right. I can hear you. I'm just listening.
All right. You're just listening too. Okay.
Yes,
people, do us a favor. We got a lot of background noise.
Yeah. I think it's caller 8011.
Okay. All right. All right. Sorry, listeners. When you call in, please turn down your background noise, because we want to give out the gift to someone that's listening, but it's going to be hard to give out the gift if we can't hear you. So if you have a lot of background noise, just to make things a lot easier, please find a place to talk so that we can give out this gift. All right, so we have 404, and that's the area where Dawad is living right now. Let's see if this is him.
Dawood,
yeah, we can hear you. Thank you. Yes, you blew up the switchboard. A lot of people called up looking for you, and I think they got a little disappointed. But we're going to let Trevon take over the interview. Trevon, could you again introduce yourself to the audience?
Hello, my name is Trevon. I have a business, Six Toys, and I'm going to be interviewing Mr. Daoud.
All right.
One of the first questions I have for you is, when you're making the comic book, who are you targeting? Kids, teens, adults, or all?
I would say all. When I first put the book together, the book was created by my family and was produced for families all over. So it wasn't, it's not a juvenile book like, say, you know, like Curious George or, you know, a book for little kids. And it's not an adult-themed book where kids can't read it. It's general entertainment, like you would say Hulk or Spider-Man. You know, the whole family can go see it. And it's not too offensive for kids, and it's not too juvenile for adults. It's kind of like everybody can enjoy it, but it kind of has a edge to it for maybe like middle school on up. But then again, younger kids can enjoy it as well.
Okay. I was just asking that question because I've seen a lot of comic books that are for kids, but mm-hmm. the language that they use are something that you wouldn't understand unless you were an adult.
Oh, you mean the language being the words are a little bit too complex?
Yes.
I think there's dialogue in this book that will send you to the dictionary, but that's a good thing. I think a lot of younger people, when they read, they expand their vocabulary from reading materials that challenge them. Sometimes when the words and situations are a bit too simple, they may not necessarily be challenged to expand their consciousness. So,
yeah.
You know, with our book, there, you know, we lure them in with the, you know, with basically general reading and entertaining dialogue. But my brother also sends me to the dictionary. You know, I'm a grown man, and he'll put words in there that are challenging to me, but it actually helps me in expanding my dialogue when I communicate with people.
Okay. Excuse me, Duane. My name's Yvette Jordan. I'm an educator, and I'm also hosting as well. I'm sorry, Trayvon. It's just we have a couple of other callers, so I want to stop you right now and see if another caller has a question. Caller, last four numbers is 3578.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, this
caller
is
3578.
Yep, I'm just calling in to listen.
This is Guy Sims, Dowie's brother.
Okay, there's a lot of noise. Got to go someplace else so we can hear you. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh. All right. So go on with your interview.
All right. Another question I have is, how long does it take to actually have the comic books out and where somebody could buy them from, like when you start with the idea to them being purchasable?
Okay, that's
about how long
question.
Does that take?
Can you hear me?
Oh, Guy, you're on?
Yeah, I'm on. How you doing, Dawood? How you doing, Leslie? If she's still there.
Okay, Leslie is not here. It's Yvette. Okay.
Oh, Yvette. I'm sorry, Yvette. Happy
oh, no problem.
Okay.
Is this Guy?
Yes, it is.
Okay, Guy. Welcome.
Thank you. To the young man who had the question, this is Guy Sims. I'm the writer of the Brother Man comic book series. I would
okay.
say for us, it usually would take about a month to from the idea of what we're going to do next to the just the outline of what we believe the story would be. Then I'll write out a full story, and then from there, once we agree on that, comes the scripting of the story, and that is taking it almost frame by frame of what happens and who says what and all the transitions that move you from the beginning of the story to the end. And once we get to that part, then, you know, during the same time, Dawood will offer up some sketches and he has to do some things on his end. But by that time, we've been working on maybe like a month turnaround. But you got to remember, that's a month turnaround with some old technology. We could probably do it much quicker because with email and internet hubs and things like that, I can get the information to him much faster than what I did when we first started the book.
Well, just one question. Because I know from experience, because I like to draw and make stories, and I just get ideas from something I might see walking to school or taking a bus. Where do the ideas come from?
Well, I think you already answered it right there. A lot of it comes from life experience. A lot of it comes from things I have read, books I have read over my life. You know, there's a quote that says there's nothing new under the sun. Any story that you see today, you can go back in history and find that same story in another different way. You can go back 1,000 years. People have been telling the same stories. So all these stories are just part of our living. So either things I've read, sometimes some people might say something, and I hear them say it, and I just write it down because I'll say, you know, that I like the way that person said it, and I'll just hold it. And then that might be a line that a character says, or it might become the title of a story. So, I mean, you've already answered that question. If you're an artist or a writer, you have to be very observant to everything that's going on around you. I think, like I said, I think you already know the formula.
Okay. Another question. I've experienced in my business when the economy wasn't so good, it affected my sales. So, how did it affect your comic book?
You want me to take it, guy?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, as of now, our comic book series has been out for 19 years, and the original series ran for about 5 to 6 years, from 1990 to 1995-96. We're just now relaunching the whole Brother Man series in a whole nother format, which is a compilation trade paperback, which are actually we repackaged the original series, and we're also working on a graphic novel. I can't necessarily say that the economy's impacted me because we're just now bringing it out during this time. So we were actually in the process of getting it back on the market. Right now, the books are selling well, and I can't contrast it to it was selling better last year because I wasn't selling them last year. I just started selling them this year. So from what I can tell, they're selling well considering what I'm doing right now, and it's expanding. You know what I mean?
Yes. Now, another question. When you were selling the comic books, how did you give back to your community?
We did several things. A lot of times I did lectures and presentations at schools, different types of training for younger people, because I always try to do that. I always try to be open and share whatever I can with younger people in terms of trying to show them how to take concept, like you were saying before, like take concept to development to creating a tangible product you can put in somebody's hand so then they can actually, you know, learn to create their own and build their own. That to me has been the mission from the beginning. It's never been about egoism and just having my own book and, hey, look what I'm doing. I've been trying to build an entity that can be an inspiration to younger people to do the same thing. And the book has definitely made an impact on an entire generation of young artists and entrepreneurs to pretty much do the same. And that's pretty much has been our focus of, you know, something to give back.
Right. I would echo the same thing, just sharing what we have. Our goal is not to get some success and then hide it from people. You know, success is when you can share with other people and they can be successful as well.
I would also like to know, when you did have your comic book, what like the startup cost for you to get the paper or the computer technology? What did it cost to like originally just get everything so you can start making a comic book?
That becomes a relative term.
Yeah, I would say
like,
that.
Yeah, depending on what it is you're trying to do. Like say if my brother Guy didn't write it, I would have to find a writer, and if they say, hey, I charge $5,000 to write it, then that becomes part of my expense. First, I got to get $5,000 to pay this writer, and then I got to buy paper and supplies, as well as going to a printer. So since we were all within the family, the talent was all within the family, we didn't actually have that overhead of production costs, creative production costs, which actually can cost you a lot if you have to hire an artist or hire a writer, if you are not the writer and the artist already built in. As far as printing, the costs have changed a lot since we started. When we did our books a long time ago, we ran 10,000 books at a time, which is probably about $2,500. And that was money that we just pretty much saved up from our jobs and put it in. And as we were selling books, we would just recycle the money and just keep recycling until we sold 750,000 books. So it kind of sustained itself. So a lot of startup fees, just to break it down, all depends on what it is you want to do and doing your own research and finding the best price.
Right. And today, today's market prices are very different. You don't have to do a lot of things the same way we did them 19 years ago.
Yeah, you can print up 50 books now. You don't have to do 10,000 books like a long time ago. Now you can do on-demand and make one book. Just if you want a prototype of a book, you can do one book for $25. It won't be feasible to sell one book at $25, but at least you can have one in hand to use as a prototype to show people what you can do. And that wasn't available. That technology wasn't available 14, 15 years ago.
Right. Even with me, when I would write things, we didn't have email, so I had to fax it to them. So there was that cost we were on opposite sides of the country. I had to fax, which was long distance, and here I am trying to fax to him a 20-page, 25-page document long distance. And, this is before cell phones and all the, free long distance. And so that was a cost. Now today I just email it to him and he gets it in, 5 minutes, and then he prints it out using his paper. So, sometimes I don't have a paper cost because I'm just typing it on the computer.
Wow. I don't know, have either of you thought of having any biblical characters in your comic books?
Any difficult characters?
Yes.
What do you define difficult?
I'm saying church themed, maybe like a preacher or something that has to do with the Bible or faith.
I guess you threw me off when you said the word difficult. You mean to have a religious figure in the comic book?
Yes.
I don't think it was difficult, he said. I think it was, what word was it? Biblical, right?
Oh, biblical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, biblical. Because this is a fictitious environment that we've created, the grounded realism of biblicalism doesn't fit. So to have Brother Man walk down the street and run into Moses, it doesn't fit. To have Brother Man go to a church and it's quote-unquote Christianity, it doesn't fit because Christianity is braced in realism and Big City is totally fictitious.
However, spirituality exists because within the book, the character Brother Man, what separates him from a lot of other people are his ideals and him tapping into his inner being, his spiritual self, and tapping into that power within himself, which a lot of us have, but a lot of us don't tap into. And that is what allowed him to eradicate his fears and to go out and right the wrongs of injustice. So religions are all grounded in a certain in these basic forms of spirituality, which you know, which lends themselves to a lot of surreal stories, such as Star Wars, them dealing with the Force, and a lot of other stories. Even within anime, the Japanese animation, they have a lot of things that are spiritually driven, where that is what kind of gives these people kind of more of a supernatural, or separates them from the average man, is their grounding in meditation or seeing beyond the physical realm.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right, and that's what I think a lot of people gravitate towards. You know, while it's not necessarily that to say that the Bible says you should treat your neighbor like this, Brother Man exemplifies it, and it's right there in front of people's face to actually see it, and I think that's what people gravitate towards.
Wow. How many characters do you have in a comic?
Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you this. I've created characters. I have not sat around to count them. I tend to focus mostly on the three main characters, Antonio Valor / Brother Man, Melody Rich, and Duke Denim. After that, I think all the other characters swirl in and out of their existence. Maybe Dalu does, because he has a drone. Maybe he has, hey, I'm up the page.
I've not accepted to count the characters in the book because there's so many,
mm-hmm.
and that's just from the original series. Now we're working on a graphic novel, which is introducing a whole new slew of characters. I mean, I can't even put a number on it. There's a lot of characters in the book because then there's a lot of characters that come and go, like in our reality. You know, it's like if you go to a soda shop and somebody's waiting on you, but that person does have an identity because they may be in the scene for a certain period of time, so you count that character as well. So when characters navigate them throughout the realm of Big City, we're coming across a lot of different characters. And I just never really counted it. Maybe there's somebody out there that can count it for us and send us the number.
I want to find out, excuse me for butting in. I want to find out how would somebody reach you if they wanted to?
Oh, they can go to our website, which is brothermancomics.com, and that's COMICS, not with an X, so it's brothermancomics.com. And from there, they can email us, they can join our mailing list, and be up on the latest information. And if they're in the Atlanta area, right now we have a Brother Man art show going on that we just had the closing night on November 21st, but the show actually comes down on November 29th. And there's over 100 pieces. I mean, we blew out the whole gallery, this place called Studio Clout. And there's a lot of large cutouts in there, original pages from the comic book. It's a unique art show, and a lot of people are impacted by it when they go in there. So that information is at our website, as well as, if they just wanted to contact us or read up on the history of Brother Man.
Okay, great. And are you giving anything away, if any of our listeners?
Yes, I believe Leslie has a trade paperback. Volume 1 that she'll be giving away. I don't know the exact process. I know I sent it out to her. I just don't know the exact process of how she's giving it away.
Okay. All right, wonderful. Trayvon, you had any other questions?
I would like to know, how would somebody go as far as acquiring one of the comic books?
Like I said, they can order directly online, brothermancomics.com. We're working on getting these books in the stores, in more stores. We have them in choice stores throughout the country, but we're trying to get them in larger networks like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, as many major outlets as we possibly can. You know, we're just in the early stages of pushing it out there. But the fan base is strong, and, you know, as we progress, we know we will tap these systems. You know, we're just in the early stages, so Trayvon, you know, as an entrepreneur, you understand things come in stages and sometimes baby steps.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask, as an educator, who really had a strong influence in your lives in terms of educators in your life, or were there?
Any? Well, that would be first and foremost our parents,
exactly.
who are both educators. My father was a college professor and a director of financial aid at a community college, and my mother was a school teacher in the Philadelphia School District. And so that's the foundation right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the foundation for, you know, doing your best, you know, reading more, you know, reading things outside of school, developing your talents, you know, all of those things, and then exposing us to different concepts of thought and those kinds of things. But then also there was the creative part, very creative family, very artistic, musically, you know, graphically, whatever, theatrically. And that was just the nature of our family. And my father was very strong about creating your own images, your own messages, and not having to be locked into what society has already laid out for you. In fact, when Kwanzaa started in 1966, it hit Philadelphia around 1968. It was our family. We had the first children's book on Kwanzaa, the first handbook on Kwanzaa. My father wasn't really sold on the Christmas tree, and so at Kwanzaa he created a thing called the African rainforest. You know, and you know, some people say, "What are y'all creating that for?" You know, and that happens when you're creative and you make something that's relevant to you.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people they always wonder, why do you want to go against what's already out there? But that's, you know, that's how we got the telephone. That's how we got the iPod, you know, because
right.
Somebody said, I need something a little bit different that speaks to me. So those are the kinds of things. So when Brother Man comes along, for us, it's a natural extension of things we have been doing, you know, for years. Now it's a natural extension, and it's a marketable product. Those?
No, I agree. I mean, that's pretty much the educational factor. It was my parents, and
right.
there was a lot of other inspiration to the book. However, I would credit them as the educational component.
Right.
Okay. Well, it's always, as an educator, it's always nice hearing your parents were the strongest influence in your life.
And, you know, for some people, they might say, well, you know what, you know, my family, they're quote, unquote, not about education. Because, you know, we have family members who aren't, you know, that's not their thing. Their thing might be something else. Their thing might be athletics. Their thing might be, you know, just making money or whatnot. You have to seek out the kinds of people who you think you'd like to emulate. If you want to be a great writer, you don't hang around the basketball court with people who just want to play ball, which is nothing wrong with that. You go to places where people are writing and they're sharing their writing. If you want to be an artist, you know, you don't hang around, you know, you don't hang around, maybe don't hang around writers. You got to go around people who are drawing and painting and sculpting and things like that. You can bring all those other elements together, but every now and then you gotta be around like-minded people who can share technique with you, share experience, who speak that kind of same language, so that if you're drawing something, they can critique it, they can praise it, but that's the motivation to keep you going.
Okay. We'll be opening up our lines in a moment, and I see a caller is here, 3578. Last four numbers, 3578.
Yeah, that's me.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's still me.
All right, I didn't see that.
Okay.
And the other caller is our next guest. Okay.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Mulder, if you want, you can have the last few questions if you have one.
just a question I was thought of while I was sitting here. I know when I had to work with things with family, there's always some kind of conflict. So has there any, been any conflict between you and your brother as far as ideas or whether you want to do something your way or he wants to do it his way?
You know, I think that is natural because since everybody's an individual, you know, everybody has, you know, everybody has their own school of thought, their own thing of what they believe works well. It has to come down to compromise, collaboration and compromise. You can get the collaboration. That Dawood and I, we do that all the time. We're collaborating our arts. But then there's also compromise because I might see something going in one direction and he sees it going in another. Each point of view is valid. You know, so if he says something that I feel like, man, that's not the way to go, I don't get angry, which is what sometimes people do, and they shut down. The thing to do is, you know, I'll make my case and say, this is why I think it needs to go this way, and I'll lay it out, A, B, C, D, and just make it that in a debate form of argument, not arguing, just yelling and screaming. But I'll say, here's my points, A, B, C, D. I think this is what should happen. And then he'll say, well, I think it should go A, B, C, D as well. And then we you know, in order for the project to move forward, we have to agree, or else we come to a standstill, you know. So sometimes either, I know working with family can be difficult because you have a lot of emotion attached to it, and you can't escape that person. You know, if you're working with a friend and you don't like it, you just say, hey, don't come over to my house anymore. You're working with family, hey, you got to eat dinner. So you're kind of trapped there. So it's one of those things of respecting each other's talents to the point where, and plus also sometimes you have to give up. And it's not giving up like I lose, but you got to say, this, you know, I like this, but you know what? It's not that important because I need the bigger picture to move forward. You got to take yourself and out of the front and put the project out front. Now, if you're working with people who just say, hey, this is not going to work, you know, you got to say, look, for us here, this isn't going to work. I'm going to work with some other people so that we can keep what we have over here intact.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right.
We're going to wrap it up again, and I want you to give your websites again one last time.
Brothermancomics.com. That's
okay.
Brothermancomics.com.
Okay.
One word.
All righty. And Mr. Mulder, your site?
Mine is tickstoysblogspot.com.
All righty. Have a wonderful day, all of you, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Yvette. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right.
Thank you.
You take care.
Okay, Adria?
Hello, how you doing?
I'm fine. I'm Yvette Jordan. I'm a guest host and an educator in New Jersey. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate this opportunity. How was your holiday?
Oh, it was wonderful. I'm stuffed. What about you? You eat up all the food?
Oh, girl, and round two is about to take place. Uh-oh.
Sometimes Friday is better than Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
All righty. For our listeners who may not know you, would you share who you are?
Absolutely. My name is Adria Young, and I am an educator and author. I'm currently residing in the state of Michigan, teaching in the Detroit Public School System for 14 years.
Okay, wonderful. And you wrote a book?
Yes, my first book was wrote in 2005, and the title is The Everyday Living of Children and Teens Monologues. The sequel to that first book was published in 2008, and that book is titled The Everyday Living of Children and Teens Monologues, Volume 2.
Okay, and you wrote it alone, or I think you had a partner?
Well, my first book was written alone,
okay.
And then my sister who resides in Atlanta helps me with the second book. So
right.
She did the editing for me.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's always helpful.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so what are your books about?
Absolutely. Being an educator and noticing and observing the different behaviors that children will bring into the classrooms. And for those who are aware of the power of the teacher, just know that it's very limited in today's time. There was a time where teachers were very well respected and had a lot of power. And at this point in time, you know, what teachers can do as far as discipline with their children is very limited.
Mm-hmm.
But yet the children, the behavior issues, not to say the behaviors, behavior situations did not exist when I attended school, just in my opinion, I just see an incline of more behavior. Like it's almost a norm, you know, for a majority of at least 25% or more of your classroom to have behavior issues. To make a long story short, I was actually becoming depressed, feeling hopeless, like all we
Welcome
can do
to
is
my
suspend.
World, girl. Okay, go on.
Like all we can do is suspend, and how much is that really solving the problem?
Yes.
Why am I going to this? You know,
yes.
As a kid, I pretended. I had dolls in the chalkboard, and I always wanted to do this job. And teachers are in my family. Like the women in my family are either teachers or nurses. So it was almost like a given that I would become one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
I was like thinking, okay, children are just all bad now. But then I had to step back from the situation and observe it as a whole. Yeah, you know, all children are not bad. Some of the situations that children are exposed to as an end result bring a not so good a reenactment. Or behavior to the classroom due to what's going on before they get to school. So I decided to write my books based upon what my children were going through. And instead of suspending, just taking a deep breath and, you know, just going beyond that call of a duty, beyond that call of duty as a teacher, because you know we wear many hats, and to say, hey, I want you to come back upstairs and eat with me, and let's talk about why you did what you did this morning. In other words, before we can actually teach and crack down to the curriculum of educating the kids, you got to be able to figure out what's going on in their mind that's got them so negatively impacted where they're acting out that they can't be taught, you know. And I don't care what anybody else is, you know, what anyone says, you know that classroom management is half the battle.
Right.
And if that child cannot be managed or your classroom cannot be managed, you can't teach anybody. I don't care.
Right.
If you were the master student in your collegiate courses for education, if you can't manage your classroom, it really defeats the purpose. Therefore, the different situations in my books are based upon what my children have gone through, what the behaviors that they have brought to the classroom. And what I tried to do was place those different acts into what's called a monologue. And for those who don't know what monologues are, those are just short acts or skits that people utilize for acting and auditioning purposes. So what I decided to do was turn my book into a multi-usage guide, that it becomes a acting guide but a socialization skills guide as well. So that's how I came about with doing that. And I know for a fact that many teachers, you know, if you read my books, you'll come to find it. The majority of the situations, a lot of teachers have been through with their students as well. But
right,
I'm
exactly.
Like, you know, I'm going to write about this, and let's see how it goes. Yeah.
I notice we have another caller. Is that a Tracy Christian?
Yes, ma'am.
How are you, Tracy?
I'm
Yvette
very
Jordan.
Good. Nice to meet you.
Same here. Alrighty, so I figured you want in on our conversation as well. Would you share how you got involved also?
Well, actually, my literary partner is the author you're speaking to right now, Adri Young. We are actually college buddies, and we paired up when we decided to promote our books together. I have a series out as well entitled The Black College Sabbatical. So I kind of inadvertently, without planning it directly, my books kind of pick up where Adra's leave off on a fiction level. It chronicles four. It's urban fiction, and it's a book series that chronicles four girls their first year at a historically black college. And with all the issues and trials and tribulations that any incoming freshman away from home at the first time deals with during that first year away from home, then they're explored, and there's a guardian angel in the book that kind of challenges the reader to figure out between the four girls which one needs his protection most. And so those experiences in that first year are chronicled through three individual installments of the book.
Okay. I just have a question. Adra, your book is Everyday Living of Children and Teens, right?
Yes, the monologues, volume
right.
one and volume two.
Right. And Tracy, your book, A Little Slower.
I'm sorry. The Black College Sabbatical. The Black College Sabbatical.
Okay. All right. In case our viewers are curious about that. And I know we have giveaways, and you sent, I think, a book?
Yes, I did.
Yes,
all right.
You did.
Okay. All right. So we can have our listeners five for that in about 15 minutes or so.
Okay.
All right. I see another caller in, and last four digits is, I think it's 9022 or an 8022. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. You have a question for either of our authors?
No, I'm just listening. This is Jeremy Williams. I know both of those guys, too.
Hello,
I'm just
Jeremy.
I'm eavesdropping, really. I'm stealing style and technique, right? And I'm just checking them out.
Are you an author as well or an educator?
Come on.
Is he?
Who asked me that question?
That brother's bad. You got a bad brother on the line now.
No, I just want to know.
I'm teasing, Mr. Williams. Okay.
If that not be Leslie
hour,
Gibbs
in an hour.
That asked me that question.
In an hour. In an hour.
Maybe my voice. Hello, Leslie. You recognize that? That's better.
Okay. This isn't Leslie, though. This is Yvette. But we'll chat
this?
In an hour.
Okay. I'm just hanging out. Go ahead.
Who is it, Jeremy?
Yes.
How are you, Jeremy? I can't believe you cut in on the ladies' conversation.
I didn't. Somebody blew my spot up. I was trying to be quiet and listen. And she was like, put my phone number all out there, my business out there. I was chilling.
Okay.
I'm quiet.
Okay, all right. We're going to put
sweetheart. We love Jeremy. So
we love Jeremy. We do that. He knows that.
Okay. All right. Right. You ready?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
All righty. So anyway, as I was asking about both of your books, as an educator, and I think what you were saying, Adra, first, about your experience in terms of classroom management. I know in my class, when my students are unfocused or are, and I've done a lesson and I'm all excited about it and they're maybe screaming and yelling, I've got to really step back and then regroup. So in doing so, I'm wondering if some strategies you have used in your everyday living of would be used. So who are your readers? Are they young people? Are they educators?
Let me tell you, I have a broad range of readers. I have parents that have told me that they were the child from one of the monologues from the books. So you got a combination of teachers, social workers, adults interested in some nonfiction reading about today's youth.
And also, Adrian, I remember reading a review on one of your reviews. You had one lady said that she was thinking about using your books as, like, icebreakers with her Girl Scout troop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that would, that's another, you know, avenue of people that, you know, would use that, that resource too. You know, they can use it for not only just classroom use, but just socialization, working with kids, period. You know,
absolutely.
As folks, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, that's a great idea. I teach African-American history, and I'm starting a unit on culture, and I can see how to use that as maybe a do now or something. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're also an acting coach, I hear?
Absolutely, and I really, really enjoy that because I'm an actress myself, and I have taught acting, and I have an after-school program that's currently inactive that catered specifically to acting and the arts. Tracy and I are advocates for the arts because we feel like, you know, with the children having different issues and bringing them to school, all the fun stuff is being removed, you know, due to budget cuts, you know. You want to take the fun stuff away from the kids. You know, you want to remove band. You want to take dance.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make vegan. You want to take clay making or, you know, home economics. You know, stuff that children look forward to after having strenuously focused, right, focus strenuously on the curriculum, and then there's no reward for it. There's nothing fun. So
right, exactly. Well, I want to move over and talk a little bit about what four girls may do as freshmen, Tracy.
Okay.
Okay. What is your book about again?
My book chronicles the experiences of four young ladies that come from different walks of life, don't know each other prior to coming to school, but they meet and develop a friendship during their first year away from home, and the setting just happens to be a historically black college campus, a fictional, you know, historically black college campus. And because, kind of like what, you know, to piggyback almost on what Age was talking about, even, you know, when we're both products of a historically black college, so we know firsthand, you know, all the anxieties that go along with going to school and being away from home in the first place. You know, you're very excited, but if you've never been away from home and away from your parents, there can be anxiety with it too, and you come with whatever issues you were dealing with at home, you know, and how whatever made you the person that you are from being a baby up to, you know, graduation day, you take all of that and you bring it with you when you go away to school and you meet
right.
other people who've done the same thing, you know. So they meet and they develop a friendship, and it kind of chronicles how their friendship grows and all their learning and lessons, you know, within that first year, because there's just a little old saying that we developed, if you can make it your first year as a freshman anywhere, but of course at an HBCU, then you can pretty much make it anywhere, you
yeah,
know.
That's
so. So that's kind of what it chronicles, but then also tying along with it, you know, just to kind of add a little more to the fictional dynamic is that there's a guardian angel who almost kind of serves as the proverbial reading companion to the reader. So, you know, he's always, although this is a fiction story and there's a lot of meat and spice, I want you to also keep in mind just the importance of these institutions and why they exist and why they're still important, you know, in today's society, and, you know, why we need to protect them and, you know, cherish them and support them. You know, because so that they can exist for more students to come along. So please keep this in mind while you're going through everybody else's little stories, and then try to figure out which one of these girls' issues is serious enough that you, as the reader, think I'm sent here to protect. Which one of these girls, you know, am I here to protect? Now, inadvertently, if I'm here to protect one, I have to oversee all that that one encompasses, you know, and everybody that they encounter, you know. So it's just, maybe to me it adds a little a different dynamic to the fictional reading process. So that's kind of how my book is.
Tracy failed to mention that she is on a mission to educate and inform our children in Michigan about the historical college, the historical black institutions.
That was my
next
question.
I'm very proud of her.
That was my next question.
Yes.
Because I'm on a similar mission in New Jersey, and I'm informing students constantly about what about our schools, what about our schools. I teach in Newark, New Jersey. And
okay.
So I'm always saying, what about our schools? You can apply here and apply there. It's just remember why they were started and how important a legacy is. So how is that going for you? Are you having a lot of students
who are saying, okay, yes, I'll apply, I want to do that, or are you meeting any resistance or what?
Well, actually, what I'm looking to do to tie in with the book, you know, is to start a series of seminars, interactive, very fun, very, you know, very high energy youth rally called Say It Loud, I'm Black College Proud. And in that way, what we would like to do is be able to go to all middle schools, you know, junior high schools as well as senior high schools, and kind of just alert our youth about historically black colleges, where they're located, and the different opportunities that are available for certain subject matters. You know, there are quite a few colleges in South Carolina that are offering free ride scholarships for young men who want to study education.
Who
want to
teach. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. You know, and they have a similar situation for African-American women at FAMU, you know, Florida A&M, to actually study computer science, you know.
Right.
So sometimes our kids, it's not to down any other institution of higher learning that exists all over the country that are outside of the realm of HBCU. But sometimes our youth don't take advantage of situations because they don't know about them. You know,
right.
So I'm hoping that I would be able to travel and, you know, just alert youth, you know, about the opportunities that are available and to remind them that there are such things as black college tours and maybe give out guides as to what you can look for when you do decide to go on a black college tour. Because if you're going over 5 or 7 or 10 colleges in 5 days or 2 weeks, That's a lot of traveling, and it's a whole lot to take in a short period of time. So you might want to know that you need to go to the admissions office, and you need to know to find out, to maybe talk to representatives or professors at the college that you're interested in. You know, those type of things, helpful hints, so that they can start thinking about it early. You know, and by the time they come up to their junior year or senior in high school, and they really start to investigate and in the college. You know, they might add HBCUs to the decision making process. That's what I'm looking to do with my book.
Are you an educator also? Are you a teacher?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. But I was never. I kind of went in as a substitute teacher, and because we were in need in the city of Detroit so heavily at the time, I was a substitute in a regular position. You know, so I taught a couple subject matters, a couple different grades. A couple of different, you know, grade levels. And what helped with that is that when I was teaching middle school kids and I was telling them that I attended an HBCU, what the HBCU was, they had no idea. They thought that some of the schools in Michigan were HBCUs because they had predominantly African-American sports. I thought that that was pretty unfortunate, you know. So that was kind of what started me to thinking about, I knew I always wanted to write a book, but I wanted to write about subject matter that was a little different than the fiction that I was reading. So when I ran across my youth being in Michigan, and no, there are no HBCUs in Michigan, no historically black colleges and universities were founded in the state or housed in the state of Michigan. So, you know, I was like, you know what, if we have a lot of kids that don't know that, we must have a lot of parents that don't know. So maybe they would be interested in a book about this subject matter. And if I put it in a fiction sense, then, you know, maybe we can pull more people in and just bring HBCUs into the conversation, you know?
Okay. And how have you found your readers? Are they receptive? Are you getting a lot of feedback? Or how's it been for you?
Well, actually, I've been finding that I've been getting feedback in the places where you wouldn't think. Sometimes people would assume that because my book is entitled The Black College Sabbatical, that it would only appeal to young readers, maybe, you know, high school students or people who are in college. But I have been finding that a lot of people well out of college, 20, 30 years removed, or maybe even never attended, are still able to enjoy my story and still able to say, you know, I never looked at the black college setting like this, or some of the things that you described in the book, I didn't realize happened at black colleges. You know, this was a really good story, so that makes you feel good. I guess what that says to me is that I wrote a story that can kind of surpass, you know, certain genres or certain, you know, groups of people. You know, it doesn't have to just be typecast to one particular culture of people or age group, or, you know, so that's becoming very fun to see.
Okay, I want to ask you and Adra, have you two merged your works at all, or are you speaking when you go and talk? Is it as a team, individually? Are you allowing students actually seeing there is a bridge from middle school, high school, and college?
Sis, you want to answer that one?
Absolutely. Let us. Tracy didn't tell you, but we in October had the opportunity to talk to college students about self-publishing, and we had an opportunity to talk to the kids about our historical Black institution experiences we had attended at school. But the answer to your question, that is in the process of coming for 2010. Have we spoken to similar groups? Yes, we have. We have been panelists. We have served as guest speakers. And together as a team, we have done so much more than we had ever done separately. When I say it's amazing and it seems like divine intervention took place when we just decided to kick off our Live Ladies Literature Tour in July, oh, my goodness, opportunities just continue to open doors. Doors just continue to open. And we have just been blessed with so many different opportunities.
And been blessed with meeting so many wonderful people.
You know, in the same field of artistry, or if not the same field of artistry, within, you know, the artistry genres. You know, we've met independent filmmakers. We have met independent poets, other authors. So it has just been an amazing journey, and we are looking so forward to what 2010 is going to bring for us.
Right.
And would any of it be writing a play or movie based on either one of your books?
She is in our head right now.
Now. Actually, we plan on doing something in March for Women's Month. And it's based upon, you know, because we had a radio interview with African Americans on the Move Book Club Monday, you know, talking about and addressing the myth that sisters can't work together productively and positively.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, Tracy and I, and now as we speak, are trying to put on a, you know, not a vagina monologue situation, but something similar to that, addressing, you know, the situations as to why women of color or women, period, can't, you know, stick together to get things done. And we are showing, we want to be examples and models of, you know, yes, you can, when you can meet a person that's secure, when you can meet a person that wants to not only help themselves but help you and others. You know, you're on the same page, you have the same goals, and you just take off. And that's what both of us did. It's like we just took off. We didn't even see it coming. You know, we made attempts, and we had no idea, honestly, that we would be so fortunate to get the responses that we have done. But as far as artists, we promote Detroit artists as a whole. Tracy and I, we try to expose the artists who are not getting recognition or who people don't know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like we try to pull people up in the process, and then, you know, it seems like as a result, we are, you know, really getting blessed for just wanting to help people out, because that just comes so natural for Tracy and I, you know. We help
right.
each other out so much, you know, and now we're like, okay, it's a shame that they don't know about this gym or this radio station or this author. We're going to go, you know, and, you know, show some support and love, and we're not going to charge anything. Tracy, do you want to tell her about our bi-monthly event that we now have?
What we've decided to do is just, you know, not get caught up in our city or any other city, you know, about what the artist society in that particular location doesn't have. Whatever we feel it doesn't have, we want to try to create and make it available to other people like us, you know, so that we add to the situation rather than just keep talking about what's wrong with it. So we in Detroit, we created a bi-monthly arts discussion, and the title of it is Coffee, Arts, and Entertainment Talk.
Uh-huh.
And what we do is through our travels on our book tour, as we meet different authors and filmmakers and community activists or anyone, poets, you know, just individual writers or aspiring artists, singers, whatever, we ask them to come on out. You're entrepreneurs in the city. You're doing things. You have events. You have projects. Come out. Talk about your projects. But then also network with like-minded people so that maybe you might merge or you might give someone who's really passionate about getting started but they don't know where to start. You may be able to offer them information that could be valuable to them, and we're not charged anything. There's a cafe chain in Detroit, Big B Coffee. So on December 13th, we did the first series of Arts and Entertainment and Coffee in October. The second one is December 13th, and it's at the Big B Coffee on Woodward Avenue in Midtown Detroit, and it's a free admission situation from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. where we have several individuals coming out to, offer their experience and expertise and networking and opportunities, you know, to aspiring artists and just, you know, so that we can kind of fellowship and, you know, pick one another's brains and lift one another up and make people, just make you feel like a more welcoming society. So those are two of our major missions, you know. In December, we have representatives from Mile Radio, which is an independent internet radio service in Detroit that not many people know about, but this brother's done things. So we have Mark D from that. We have Jillian Blackwell from Urban Life Promotions. We have Kenny
Jerry Hendo. Brooks.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Wow. Okay. So
we even have the comedian sector, Heather J. Henderson.
Right,
who is
right.
Awesome upcoming comedian, nationally known, right here in
I do believe we have Jeremy coming out. Jeremy Williams is coming out to help
support.
Us out today and talk. And we also have Monique Mincer. And,
right.
You know, so we're putting other authors on that are, or other artists on as a whole that are willing to share their experiences and help uplift that whole community. So that's something
okay,
that we're doing
so
by
then you're passing it on, and that's important.
Right.
Yeah.
I want to actually thank you for sharing with us. And how would some of our listeners reach you if they wanted to? Is there a website or email address or?
Oh, definitely. Adrian, you want to go first with yours?
Well, they can reach me on Facebook. Or you can email me at www.ardanyl.me, and it's ardanyl.me.
Okay.
And my web address, I can also be contacted on Facebook as well. We are all over Facebook. All you have to do is just look up our names, and my name is Tracy E. Christian, spelled with an I-E. And also I have a website, www.tracyechristian.com. So you can.
All righty. Well, thank you, and thank you. Adria, I know you're on vacation with your brother, so thank you for taking time away from that.
Oh, thank you. No problem. And Tracy is with her family in Cleveland, but we understand what we do.
Right. I was just going to say, and Tracy, thank you for your time. However, we are out of time.
Okay.
All righty. So have a wonderful day.
You do the same.
All righty.
Bye now.
All righty. Bye. Okay, callers. Our next guest will be Uriah Israel, who is a publisher. So we're waiting for Uriah right now, unless they're on, and I don't see them on at the moment. So we'll just wait.
each other. Maybe years and years from now. Family reunion. Got to have a family reunion. Family reunion. It's so nice to come together. Get together. I wish Grandma could see the whole family. I sure miss her face and a warm and tender embrace.
Hello, caller.
Hello. Yes.
Hello, Uriah.
Yes, speaking.
Hi, it's Yvette Jordan. I'm hosting the show today. Welcome.
Yes, ma'am.
How
well,
are
thank
you?
Thank you. Fine, oh, yourself?
I'm great, thanks. For those of our listeners who may not know you, would you share some information about yourself, please?
Okay, my name My name is Uriah Israel. I am the creator and founder of art director for Hidden History Publishers, an educational literature company. We publish educational literature, and one of our main products, one of our most successful products has been our Black Inventors Calendar. We're originally from Boston, Massachusetts, and we currently are in Georgia. Anything else?
No. Actually, I want to ask you about your name. You said Hidden History Publishers, and that's a curious
yes.
name, although I teach history. I try to focus on Black history. So I think I understand what you mean, but would you just explain why you sought that name out?
Well, like I said, I'm originally from Boston, Massachusetts, and when I moved here in 2005, I've always worked in publishing. I'm a lifelong bibliophile. As a youth, I always loved books and history period. And when I moved to Georgia, a petition to the state of Georgia to include more African-American history in the state curriculum. And the sister's name, she was from the Apex Museum of African-American History. Her name was Michelle Mitchell. And she was trying to get the state of Georgia to include more curriculum in the state's education department. But my point for creating the company and using that name is that I knew they would never do that. And our history, for the most part, is hidden. When you take trips and different things, you find out little bits and pieces scattered all over the place. But there's really no—I haven't found it yet—no collective place to get like data that's critical to the benefit of our people, our children, ourselves.
Right. Exactly. Well, I teach in New Jersey, and we have a law. It's called Amistad, where for the past 7 years, it's been a mandate where history teachers must infuse African-American history within social studies. However, it is a challenge. So I understand exactly what it is you're talking about. Are you working with any schools in your area
Currently, I basically, this is, we're at a grassroots level right now, mm-hmm. and, you know, we do PTA meetings and different organizations that are serious about education for our youth. We're not in the Fulton County system or anything like that. We are we're working at the grassroots level, I should say.
Okay, so is that basically through organizations, or is it word of mouth, or individuals?
Yes, word of mouth, word of mouth, individuals and organizations. We actually will create. We actually do graphic design. Our company will custom make calendars and different things, bookmarks, whatever you need. One of our, like I said before, our calendars is probably our most successful product. We put school logos on the front, you know, information about your school throughout the calendar, you know, to help you fundraise funds for your program.
Mm-hmm. So I see you're based in, is that Atlanta?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. You vend in other areas, though, I'm sure, because,
yes.
For example, I think you met Leslie at the Harlem Book Fair.
Yes.
Okay, so you travel nationally, or do you just focus on certain areas, or how do you have your work out there?
Well, the plan was to actually focus on literary events on the East Coast for these last 2 years, and the Harlem Book Fair is one of our most successful events. It's probably the premier event for Black literature in this country, and we're there every year. We're looking for new events. If you know of any, I'd welcome them. But we are, I can understand, we are on the cutting edge of Black educational literature publishing. There are not one thing, we as educators, we need to begin to publish our own books. And it's not a glamorous and exciting way for people want to be into literature, but they're like doing this urban fiction and different things. But we need to like go back to the what's needed for our community, which is educational literature, even historical fiction. But our people need to know where we come from so we can understand where we need to go.
Okay, would you share with our listeners who you have in your calendars or in examples of what it is?
Okay. Well, this year's calendar, the first person we have is Benjamin Banneker, who is a mathematician, astronomer, and architect. Grew up in the 1700s of this country, and he was a genius, and let me see. He's one of the first people. We have Garrett Morgan, the
mm-hmm.
Inventor of the traffic signal,
traffic light,
and the gas mask. He was also a very clever entrepreneur. Elijah McCoy, who developed an oiling device for vehicles and locomotives. We also have Granville T. Woods, who designed what today is in most major cities. Any public transit system has a third rail system. Granville T. Woods is the creator of that system of electricity. We also have George Washington Carver, who is probably African American's most recognized scientist, is probably George Washington Carver. They say that he's like in the top three inventors, most prolific inventors in this country has ever had. George Washington Carver rescued the agriculture, southern agriculture of this country. He turned it around and rescued it. But see, one thing about George Washington Carver, people don't really know. He was a musician. He was a painter. He worked in plastics, soy. I mean, he you know, people talk about the Green Revolution. He taught that nothing should go to waste. He used everything, over and over again. Right now, this country is going through a urban gardening rebirth because of the economy. He was one of those people who taught about how to. He was a grassroots. He went around the country in a truck that he designed to teach the farmers how to grow stuff. I mean, that was amazing for the time and era that George Washington Carver lived in. I can keep going through the calendar if you'd like me to go through it.
No, I think you explained some. I have a question, though. Are you focusing on inventors from years ago? Is it changing every year? Or would you have some inventors who are more recent, or?
Yeah, eventually we'll have more contemporary inventors, but I feel it's crucial that at this phase that we continue to promote inventors of the past for several reasons. One of the reasons being that they're unsung. People don't, we think we have it hard today, but these guys couldn't even walk into a library. They didn't have the resources that we had, the battles that they had to fight in order just to get their product sold. People turned them down for the color of their skin. They had to act like they couldn't read. They had to, Garrett Morgan had to behave. He had to act like he was an Indian, and he wasn't, he had to act like that he was not the creator of his invention. I mean, these things, they have to go through, and we need to recognize the character traits they needed to be successful so that it can carry forward today. Because sometimes people think that, you're going to make a quick buck, and their stories demonstrate that that's just not the case sometimes. You have to have character, perseverance, endurance, and it's going to take some time.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe we are collecting information for contemporary black inventors, but their stories, the people that in our current calendars, their stories still they're just not known, and I just don't feel comfortable with that. But soon we will be working on contemporary calendars with contemporary inventors.
Okie doke. What other calendars do you have, or is it just inventors you focus on?
We have Hidden History Publishers, another calendar called African American Heroes of the United States Western Frontier.
Mm.
It talks about the unsung heroes once again of United States expansion of the United States, the cowboys. The pioneers, different how we founded different cities, how we were for the most part, we were the spearhead of going into different areas because Europeans were not welcome, but they welcomed us, and they would ride our backs into these territories because of the relationship we had built. And one person in particular, James Beckworth, they used him as a scout in different things. And then after he made the relationship, they betrayed his relationship. And that's another story in itself.
Okay. So basically your product with Hidden History is basically calendars. You don't have any other products at this time?
At this time, we're working on workbooks and a read-along CD go along with this. That's one of our products that we're very excited about. And before the next Harlem Book Fair in July, those products should be before the next school year begins.
Okay, wonderful. I was going to ask you a bit about marketing and advertising. So would you explain how you've done that? Say if somebody has an interest in doing something similar and they're saying, okay, what do? I research something, go online, I print it up, and that's it. I'm sure it's not. So would you explain your process or how it's been for you, if you met any challenges along the way or not?
Okay. Marketing and promotion. One thing I did before I began this product is research the educational bookstores in my area and also the black bookstores in my area. It just, in bookstores, period. One thing I need to say is this. Sometimes we pigeonhole ourselves, and some of my biggest customers have been people from other nationalities. The Hidden History doesn't just talk about our history, even though, that's my main interest. But a lot of people are interested in just knowing history. You know,
right.
America is suffering because they don't know the truth. They just don't know the truth. We're walking around with these huge egos, like we, you know, but they don't. We need to know the whole truth of the matter, and that's what Hidden History seeks to promote. One thing I like to say is, what made Thomas Edison a great inventor? What did he do? What did George Washington Carver do? What was the scientific process about? You know, we need to be able to look at history, the truth of the matter. And you know, look at and see the lessons in it. But back to marketing, I did research school bookstores, educational books and materials, those stores in my area. One of them is School Box here, and then also the black bookstores, and then also just the regular bookstores. And I basically went out and showed my product. I'm looking at bigger distributors right now, and that's you have to get your price down where they can. Everything is about people. You know, what will this product do for that store? And so when I approach them, you know, my product has to be a certain price in order for them to put it in the store.
I see. Okay, and then you can realize a profit in the store. Also can, is that how it works?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I get it. Wow. All righty, I'm looking for I thought we had another caller. We don't at the moment, so.
Yes.
We're having a giveaway, though. Have you supplied us with an item for a giveaway?
Yes, ma'am. I believe you should have received I believe you do have something black.
It was a calendar?
Right,
yes, ma'am. Okay. So when we get another listener, you can give it away.
Okay.
We have two calendars, I believe.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And if somebody wanted to reach you, is there a website you have or an email address? How would they reach you?
Our website is www.hiddenhistorypublishers.com.
Okay. All right. And from there, you can order whatever you want.
You can order it, and you can call if you like to place a bulk order. I find that most people that buy what I sell, they usually want all three of my calendars. And then some different groups, they always buy a case, because you know, like I have one guy, he has a Boy Scout troop, and he's just like, I gotta have a case. He always buys more than one, and people who see this are compelled to purchase it because they understand how important the information is.
Well, that's good also for an organization as a fundraiser, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Okay. When would you be in this area, in the New York, New Jersey area?
Well, I know for a fact I'll be in Harlem.
In August.
in August. It's like, yeah. one event. I'm still finding it every once. I just find these events, and there was this one. I don't know if off the top of my head. At a local college. Can't think of it. But as I find out different things, and depending on, I'm always open to travel. But there was a Black Writers event conference happening there. I think at the beginning of this month, December. And I can't think of the name. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. Have you talked with Leslie at all about organizing an event?
Yeah, we spoke about I would like one of my desires is to get educational literature publishers together and do a conference. This is something that needs to be done. When I go out to Black Expos, I see different people who are creating books and dolls and different things and educational material, and it's time for us to pick that up and run with it. Every other nation publishes our materials for our classrooms. That's ridiculous, and it's really like a responsibility that we needed to take it and run with it, because that's not good. I feel like that. We need to publish our own books.
Well, when you talk about, are you talking about a conference for Black publishers, or are you talking about those who supply material, writers? What are you talking about, so I'm clear?
I'm talking about, I say educational materials, like if you were a teacher and you go to your, I guess the county allows you certain books to that you can purchase with their funds. Now, what percentage of those books are actually published by African Americans? And when you look at them, sometimes you see you can. When we grew up, the information was so slanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never forget the one thing that sticks out in my mind when I was like in the fourth grade. It was talking about the American Revolutionary period. Remember 1976, the bicentennial year.
Right.
But you didn't really see anything about our contribution to that era. And we need to create stuff that our children need to be encouraged to be doctors, lawyers, teachers, scientists. And they're not getting that. They're seeing images with other of other nationalities, but there's tons of information out there about us. And we need to publish books so our children will feel proud to see their own image.
Right.
They need to get the information about people, what they went through, all the scientists, the African-American scientists that they don't know anything about, so they can understand that they don't have to be a basketball player or a football player or even music. You know, I'm looking, you know, all the musicians that came before who we have today, who wore their clothes and actually, you know, what they went through, the Marian Andersons and the different people, what their struggles were. We need to see this so it can encourage our children to be
right.
While they can
that.
Be. Yes, ma'am.
Right, I agree with that. I was a little unclear about what you meant about a conference for the Black educational materials, although now I think I understand what you're saying. We have a caller on, author Jeremy Williams. I was wondering if you had a question, Jeremy, or if you're still just listening.
Yeah, I'm just listening.
Okay.
I don't have a question.
Okay. All right, I'm just... So one thing, Uriah, I as an educator, and I am a teacher of history, I teach Black history, and when I look at a textbook, usually, so quite honestly, I hardly ever use a text for the same reason you're saying. I find it is usually Eurocentric or it has a myopic viewpoint. So that's why I use a myriad of sources. So if you are thinking about organizing this, I think it's important that things aren't, as a publisher, everything ought to be included, so it's not one viewpoint. And that's
right.
Something I feel a lot of publishers aren't doing.
Right.
So, where do you get your images from? Do you have illustrators, or are you using photos for your calendars, or what?
I use actual photos. You know, you have to purchase these images from different like clearinghouses. A lot of libraries and schools actually own these images, and basically you can purchase you can buy the right to use these images.
Okay, I see. Well, we are now winding down. We have only a couple of more moments left.
Okay.
And I want to thank you for phoning in and wondering if you have any other advice for anybody who is thinking of acting as a publisher, a writer, or anything.
Okay. I have one thing to say. I recently on my Facebook account, there was a quote and said, the powers that be do not have to destroy books to destroy our culture. All they have to do is get people to stop reading.
Mm.
And as a publisher, we must make the curriculum, the books, interesting enough to inspire our children to read. And that's my job.
Okay.
Like that.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for phoning in. We have next up Mr. Jeremy Williams, and if you want, you can stay in and listen, and if not, we hope we'll hear from you soon.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
We
thank
have
you.
About a minute, and then we'll have Jeremy Williams.
I can listen to you online, right?
Yes, you can.
Okay. That's an awesome.
Okay, thank you. Listeners, we have one more minute, and then Mr. Williams will be with us.
My brother.
Hello, Mr. Williams.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, it's Yvette Jordan, and thank you, and welcome. Black Friday on Antique E-Show.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me on Black Friday.
Yes, on Black Friday. How was your holiday?
It was great. How was yours?
It was wonderful. I'm still stuffed.
I bet.
What I want to do is, ask a little bit about you and a little bit about your book, and then I'll address a couple of other matters. So I know you're an author, but would you explain a little bit for our listeners about what it is you've written?
Well, I was born by a river in a little tent, right? I am a writer. I like to use a broader term, like artist, really. And the whole historian thing and anything else I do kind of falls under that. But at the moment, I'm a historian, got a degree from Michigan State, which is where the book we're going to talk about really took shape and form. But it really started with my mom and dad. My dad, hello?
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah, my dad was took my mom out on a date to the Flame Bar, which was in Black Bottom at the time, to see Billie Holiday perform. And my mom and dad always talked about that little story when they went on their first date, and literally they got married, had 12 kids. And then just growing up in Detroit, the memory of Black Bottom was always there. Everybody was always talking about it. There's a bar called Black Bottom Lounge. There's a funk group called the Black Bottom Collective, and everybody was always talking about Black Bottom. So by the time I got into college, it started out as an essay, left college and wanted to do something beyond just creative nonfiction writing, wanted to do something in a historical sense, and I chose Black Bottom because there's not a lot of work out there on Black Bottom. So as a historian, you kind of want to be the first to kind of like break ground, create the historiography, bring forth that fresh perspective, and that's what I did. That's why I did the book Black Bottom.
Okay. Well, for those of you, for example, originally I'm from New York, so if I mention Harlem, folks know, oh, okay, I know what you're talking about. But for those who may not know the area you're talking about, would you explain a little bit about that for us, please?
Yeah, Black Bottom was a little ethnic area on the Lower East Side of Detroit near the downtown area. And this is where people, the black migrants coming from the South to get jobs in the booming auto industry, settled. I wasn't Black Bottom because of black people. It actually didn't really get black until the 30s. It was actually the European immigrants, the Italians and the Irish and the Germans and Jews, Russians, et cetera, who settled the area first, or at least after the French had founded it in 1701. So it was black because it was called Black Bottom. The French farmers had given it that name because of the dark, rich topsoil.
Uh-huh. So mm-hmm. It's not about Africans, African Americans. It's about...
Oh, and that's why, again, that's why the first chapter is dedicated to European immigrants, to give it mm-hmm. to give people more of a broader historical perspective on the area. Again, it's not black because of black people.
I see. Okay. So, how long has your book actually been out? Is it a year or two?
No, it just came out, October the 22nd. I went to Detroit, October the 26th, I'm sorry. I was in Detroit. By the 26th, promoting it, doing lectures on it, and at Barnes and Noble, et cetera. And so I'm actually back in Arizona to rest up a bit, and I'll be back there in Detroit promoting the book all the way through May. As a matter of fact, when I get back to Detroit, I'm going to be at Adriel Young and Tracy Christian's Bigsby Coffee Function. So, again, the book came out October 26th, and I'm going to be hanging out with it for a long while.
Okay,
a lot of things going on for Black History Month, too.
Are you doing a national tour?
Not a national tour, because this is really just a local regional book. The book is available all over the world, technically, online especially.
Okay.
And at the national level, people can go on to any Barnes & Noble bookstore and order it. Or from my website, again, online too. But it is available at many places in Detroit, at all major bookstores, Barnes & Noble, et cetera. There are a lot of mom-and-pop stores, such as the Shrine of the Black Madonna, the Charles Wright African American Museum would have it, Spiral Collective down in Wayne State would have it, Our Hurt Company in Eastern Market would have it, the Historical Museum, Marwell's Bookstore, Michigan Trade & More in Plymouth, Michigan, Town Peddler in Livonia. So they're available all over throughout Detroit.
Okay. All right, mm-hmm. Wonderful. And you're also talking about it. So I'm just thinking, I teach history, so I'm even thinking if you have a website or a blog, maybe I'll assign some excerpts or something for my students, and we can do a blog about it with you. That would be great.
They can go to my website. There are excerpts of the book that you can get from my website, pushnevada.com, PushNevahda.com. You can go there, or I'll send you the book.
Okay, great. Okay. All right.
And you can go to my website, send me an email and your address or whatnot, and I'll send it to you. Great.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. I'm wondering if you've worked with any other schools possibly yet. Or are you thinking of doing that?
I am getting those kind of calls. Macomb Community College. I am going into the library. I am in the process of going into the schools directly. And what happened is a lot of people were coming out to the lectures and the book signings. Parents were bringing their children and were asking me, hey, can you come into my school and speak on this issue? And I give them a card and I get a call or from the principal or the parent or whatever, follow-up calls to get me into the school. But I am at most of the libraries in the metropolitan area, as well as down in the hood, as we would say. I am trying to move beyond Barnes & Noble and Borders books, right?
Okay. Okay. So where folks are.
To where people are.
Say.
Yeah, because what happens is there aren't a lot of Barnes & Noble or major bookstores in the inner city. But they are even the libraries, a lot of the libraries that I will be lecturing at or have lectured at are not necessarily in Detroit. But as the tour progresses, I am going deeper and deeper into the inner city, into the schools, and into those libraries, like the Detroit Historical Society, which is down on what we're in the funk of the hood, really. Southfield Public Library and Sherwood Forest Branch is right there on West 7 Mile, down in the funk of the hood. So I am trying to get closer and closer into it, because these are the people that are just as excited about the book and want me to come in and speak on it. So that's happening, and those kind of dates are being added to the tour as well.
Okie doke. I see Arcadia is your publisher. How was it working with them?
it was great. I had a great editor, Anna Wilson, a great person. I'm actually working on a second book for them, the Detroit Urban League, but it was pretty good. She gave me artistic space to do what I wanted to do. We had some issues, particularly with the book cover, and I'm always talking about that. The book cover, what I wanted. I had five choices, and what I wanted, actually, the first, what you see on the book cover, wasn't my first choice, but it worked, you know, just as well. The one thing that I had to always be cognizant of was what Anna told me when we first got to talking about the book, was that she really wanted to present this kind of like, I'm trying to find the words she used, happy, positive image of Detroit. And when you're talking about Black Bottom.
Versus,
you know,
what?
Exactly. we did work it out. She did let me have the chapter on the riots.
Okay, you included that in there?
Huh?
You included it in there?
Yes, Sojourner Truth riots and Sojourner Truth and the riots, which was Sojourner was the name of a housing development that blacks were trying to get and whites didn't want to have, and as a result, the riot ensued. She did let me have that, and we worked it out. I mean, so I was able to tell a story to not necessarily a whitewashed version of Black Bottom. I was able to do my thing and appease Anna as well, and it worked because the overall effect that I was trying to give happened. People were able to buy the book, and people enjoyed the story, and people were able to, white and black people have that connection to Black Bottom, and they were really satisfied with the book, and that was very important for me.
Okay. I have a question about your research. How did you do it? Was it ethnographic? Was it mostly interviews, or was it both? Was it qualitative and quantitative, or...?
It was all of that. I did go into Detroit the last half of the last quarter of last year, and I went to the Wayne State University, Walter Reuther. I went to the Detroit Public Library, Burton Historical Collection, the Detroit Public Library, Bentley Historical Collection at University of Michigan. I did do some interviews, private personal interviews with people. I did look through some private personal photos, but most of the images came from the collections, from the archives. Burton, Bentley, and Walter Reuther at Wayne State.
Okay.
But then I even have a bibliography in the back of the book as far as the reading materials I had used and tried to integrate into the book. You know, at the same time, I'm looking at newspapers from between 1920 to 1950.
Oh, wow.
So the research is very broad.
And how long was that process? It took you a couple of years working on this book, or how long was it?
Well, this particular book, I had a year to complete it, 6 months to have it on her desk. I was done. Once I came back from Detroit and came back here out to Arizona to write it, I was done with the book inside of 2 to 3 months at least. I came back here, started working on it in December. By March, I believe, I was done with it. I mean, there were some changes that she wanted, but pretty much the bulk of the book was done by March.
Okay.
But I knew where I was going, too. I knew where I was headed. Once I got the images and spent that time in Detroit the last year, September or so through November, I believe, once I knew where I was going chronologically with the images, putting the story together and writing the story wasn't difficult at all.
You think you offended anyone?
That's a good question. No, because, again, I tried to integrate everybody's story in the book. Again, it's not just about Black people and Black Bottom. I think I would have offended someone had I not talked about the European immigrants. Of course, I would have offended the Polish community, the Hamtramck community, for instance. And when I called, got the call from the Hamtramck Library to come into the library and do a lecture in February, I think it is, one of the things that the library director said was, hey, and she was of Polish descent, and she said, hey, I remember this story. My parents settled there, and she had a connection. I've been getting that kind of response from a lot of library directors who are asking me to come into school. So had I not presented the first chapter of European immigrants, then I would have offended someone. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I tried to. There are some people who would, like, for instance, come out to the signings or a lecture or something and say, hey, what about this story? Somebody mentioned the Purple Gang in Detroit. There's already a book out on Arcadia on the Purple Gang, which is why Anna Wilson would have never let me talk about the Purple Gang in my book, for instance. But just a little, not really nitpicking, just concerns really about what I didn't cover, but people still enjoyed and respected the book, what I did, how I treated the issue of Black Bottom. People really enjoyed it, and people walked away from with the book feeling satisfied that the story was complete enough. To tell the total story of Black Bottom would probably be a volume and series, right?
Mm-hmm.
But people walked away from the book satisfied, I think, especially the people who had been there, who had lived there. The senior citizens who remembered growing up in Black Bottom walked away from this project feeling that their story had been told.
Okay. If I'm a young writer and I have a couple of aspiring ones in my class, for example, what advice would you give a young writer nowadays?
To not write for the – don't think about being published. Just to – no? Excuse me?
No, I'm saying, like, yeah. I'm agreeing with you.
Right. I think it's more important, as well as your writing, it's more important to be reading. I reviewed a lot of books. By the way, I did review Adria Young's wonderful book, and I'm in the process of reviewing Tracy Christian's book. But anyway, as you're writing, you should be reading, too. And mm-hmm. I get a lot of, for instance, that I reviewed, that the first thing you sense is that the person is not an avid reader. But anyway, you should be reading as well, and you should take advantage of the technology, the blog spaces and stuff like that, where you can get on and create your own blog for free and put your work out there and kind of test it and put it out there and see how people are reacting and responding to it. But do not write for or with the thought of being published. Just write. Just try to hone your craft. I'm not too big on book clubs. I think book clubs only provide you a captive audience, but they won't teach you how to write. And a lot of people go into those book clubs thinking that they're going to learn how to write. I think you can learn technical writing, maybe journalism or something like that, but I think real writers are born. So spend that time reading and writing. That's very important.
Reading and writing. And what about the, well, how did you actually start reviewing books?
I think that's a good question. It's been a while. I put it out there in internet land somehow, or I don't know if somebody approached me. It actually started in school. A lit review, in essence, is a book review as well. So it probably started at the academic level. When I got out of college, I wanted to continue not just reading but critiquing literature as well. And so I put it out in probably on a website or a blog spot somewhere, and people responded and people liked what I was doing. I've even gotten offers or people who would contact me to edit their next book, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So I just put it out there in internet land, and people started to respond. I got a stack. When I was on tour, came back from tour, I got a stack of them right now, starting with Tracy Christian's book.
Okay.
So it's really easy to get into book reviewing. And once people trust your opinion, then others will follow, so to speak. Because people are, you know, people are telling other authors whose books you reviewed are telling other people, hey, I really like his review, check him out or whatever. Or in their reading, whatever I reviewed is, you can go out on my website and look at it, and people kind of like how I review books, the way I review books.
Mm. Okay, you mentioned about blogs. How else are you using technology, if at all?
I do have a website. I do have a blog. I'm on Facebook. I'm always trying to promote and get my name, out as best as I can. But definitely, I try to maintain a serious online presence, because we're in that kind of era now. We're in that kind
right.
of age. People are even buying books online. I think probably in the next 10 or 15, maybe 20 years, you won't even have major bookstores to, you know, influencing how people buy books the way they do now. Because at this point, we still want to go in and see a book and feel it and touch it.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows, in the next 15, 20 years, people will buy books online only. And so I want to be a part of that whole movement, you know, that whole progressive movement, right? So I have to maintain and keep a serious online presence as an author.
And
as a matter of fact,
go ahead.
As a matter of fact, somebody just recently told me that, hey, you need to upgrade your page. I thought it was cool. I saw the hit page. It was like, you need to, you know, be more, do something different with your page, and I'm in the process of doing that. So, because people do go to my website and they look for new and exciting things, and that person was coming from that perspective as a viewer.
So, do you have a strong following? You should know this, whether or not you have a strong following or not.
Well, to answer that question would take us into another direction, and I don't think we have the time and space to do that. But I think I do. I think people are catching on to the whole Jeremy Williams Push Nevada theme. Push Nevada is my writing name, actually. And I think the book has definitely opened up a lot of doors, and it has brought me new readership. It has brought me a different level of fan base. Of course, yeah. Definitely being in Detroit, I've been introduced to another whole kind of readership with the history books. And that's why I like writing history books and creative nonfiction. My first book was a nonfiction. But with this, writing a history book to bring about new readers. You know, people, of course, who are interested in history.
Well, I can move in that vein a little bit and talk about marketing and advertising.
Okay.
As a new writer, I mean, for you, obviously, you're in Barnes & Noble, you're on Amazon, you're there where so many other writers want to be. However, what would you recommend for somebody who is new?
A published author?
Non-published, brand new.
Oh, gosh. Well, again, like I said before, if this is a question about you being a non-published author trying to publish, then I think there are a lot of good things going on in the self-published. My first book was self-published. And I think
really?
There are a lot of – oh, yeah. I think there are a lot of good things going on in the whole self-publishing area. People are doing their own thing. They're taking control of their writing lives, their professional lives. They're cutting out the middleman. So I'm not just because my first book was published, but I'm not against that. Like, I'm working on a new novel, and I'm trying to decide on whether or not to shop it or to publish it myself. Because you do have the control, you cut out the middleman, you can pretty much do what you want to do, and the sky's the limit. When you're with a traditional publisher, you know, it's a lot you have to deal with. You have to deal with that whole dynamic of what they want and what their vision is, as opposed to, again, self-publishing, you can do what you want to do. Now, there are some pitfalls to self-publishing, and which is more... has to do more with editing. A lot of people, I've come across a lot of books that were self-published that should have had a better editing process, perhaps my first book included. But still, I'm all for the whole self-publishing thing. I really am. And again, I'm working my new novel. I have plans to submit it to traditional publishing houses, but I haven't ruled out self-publishing it again.
Mm. Wow. Okay. I see we have a caller. Uriah, is that you? Are you on?
That's me. Yes, ma'am. I had a question.
Okay.
First of all, I'd like to say I have to give thanks to Leslie for this whole Black Friday idea of having all of these publishers and different people on. And I wanted to say something. I want to ask a question to Jeremy. I would love to have a copy of your book, and if we could barter or something like that, I would appreciate it. And you can get my information. I can give you my information now, or some other way. I would love to have a copy of your book.
Great, let's do it. Again, go to my website, leave your info, and I'll be glad to send you the book.
Excellent. Okay, I'm off. I'm still listening, but I'm going to get off the phone.
That's when we help each other, exactly. Okay, I know you left you had somebody send in a giveaway.
Yes, I did. I did send in a book for the giveaway, of course.
Okay. All righty, so we'll have it given away for a student. All righty. Our time is almost up. So if you would share your email address and website one more time for our listeners.
Again, go to my website, www.pushnevada.com. That's P-U-S-H-N-E-V-A-H, as in Harry, D-A.com. And I want to thank Leslie. She's doing some wonderful things, and I want to thank her for having me back on the show and allowing me to participate in this Black Friday giveaway. I really appreciate it, Leslie, and I love you.
Okay. I don't know if she is on right now. She may hear you. I'm not sure. But Leslie, are you there? No, she isn't. She isn't there right now. I'm looking. However, I will inform her.
Yeah, she feels me. She hears me. You're not calling her the right way. Let me try it. Hello, Leslie.
You're funny. No,
that.
But I can see if she is online or if she's on the phone, and she's not. That was good. Okay.
But thank you, too, Yvette Jordan. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
All right. You're most welcome. So next up we have Gwen Ragsdale. So if you want to stay on for that, you're more than welcome. She is a filmmaker and made My Slave's Sister.
Okay, I'm here.
All right.
Hanging out.
Okie doke.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back in a few minutes. Bye. Music, please.
Oh, you're very poor, Nabane. Playing for change. Mokil Mobimba, more fire.
Hi, Gwen. It's not Leslie. It's Yvette Jordan. I'm hosting.
Oh, okay.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay. Would you hold on a second? I think my phone is... Okay. 1 second, please. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, wonderful. Welcome.
Thank you.
My slave sister. For those listeners who are not aware, Ms. Ragsdale is a filmmaker and has a featured film, My Slave Sister. So would you mind, Gwen, if you would explain a little bit about that and how you got in filmmaking, please?
Sure. Excuse me. The title of my film is My Slave Sister, Myself. And it's a documentary film about the transatlantic slave trade. What I do in this documentary is I compare the experiences of enslaved African women with the effects of experiences endured by African Americans today. And I found that the comparisons were quite compelling. When you think you've had a bad day and you think back to what our slave sisters had to endure, you almost feel ashamed for having felt that way. But recognize that a price was paid for the freedoms that we have today, a great price was paid for the freedoms that we have today, that we sometimes take for granted. These are some mighty strong women that survived the capture, the trek, the voyage, the auction block, life on the plantation, and all aspects in between, so that we can have the freedoms that we have today, and we don't necessarily look at it that way. But in my film, I use first-person narratives to describe what it was like for the sisters aboard these death ships, how they were forced to have sex with these different European slavers, and watch your children also be sexually and physically abused. Many of them became pregnant. And remember, these were African women.
Right.
So when these women started having these babies came out light. And they weren't used to seeing these babies who were light and white. Many of them, you know, thought the babies were the devil and actually killed them, bashed their heads, and bashed their brains out because they did not think that they were, you know, of God, so to speak, or Allah. Then having had they survived that, many of them also came down with diseases that these Europeans had given them. And remember, the sanitation on these ships were horrible. There was none. Whatever you did right there.
Right.
Oftentimes, when you think about what it's like when you and your girlfriends work together on a regular basis or just women that you're around on a regular basis, ironically, you'll find out that your periods synchronize, because that's kind of nature's way of saying that, you know, to let the male know that this is a good time for breeding or not. Well, this happened on these slave ships as well. And when these women were not able to take care of their personal hygiene, that also became a part of the waste that they were sitting in. So it was just a deplorable condition for these women. And as I said, I use these first-person narratives to describe that experience. Then I move on to the auction block, where I show how the women were forced to stand and strip naked in front of throngs of screaming white men, and had their bodies checked. Every orifice of their body was checked, and they were turned around and their legs spread apart. And the men, you know, just had a field day at just looking at them in a lecherous manner. And I compare that to what many of our today's African American women do, who willingly go on the strips at these strip clubs and willingly show their body. You know, they have no idea of their history, because if they had, they might not be so willing to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to give the entire film away, because I really would like your listening audience to go on our website, purchase the film, and take it home and share with your family and friends, because to my knowledge, and others have told me, there is no other film such as mine that shares the information in the way I do, and it really draws you in and recognize that if we're not careful, history can repeat itself, and in many ways it already is.
Okay, well, how long is your film, and how would you go about getting it?
It's a 55-minute documentary. The first 45 minutes is the actual documentary part. The last 10 minutes is a music video. This is my second film. The first film that I created, called Lest We Forget, which features my husband and I. And by the way, my husband and I, J. Justin Ragsdale, are also the owners of Lest We Forget, the Black Holocaust Museum of Slavery in Philadelphia, located 3650 Richmond Street in Philadelphia in the Port Richmond section. And that's a 45-minute DVD. And what I was about to say, each one of our DVDs also has a music video that complements the documentary. So it's something for everyone, for young, for old, for all all ethnicities can benefit from the information that our films provide. And again, it can be purchased on our website, which is www.lest, that's L-E-S-T, We Forget, museumofslavery.com.
Okay, thank you.
We also are offering a value package where you can get both DVDs. The Lest We Forget DVD is $20. The My Slave Sister, Myself new documentary is $25. And it comes with our little-known black history booklet, which includes 10 documents of little-known black history facts, like the origin of the N-word, where the word cracker comes from, picnic, the Willie Lynch letter, and many other documents. You can get both DVDs and the booklet for just $45, which is a $5 savings.
Okie doke. So if they go on your website, they can find all of that information.
That is correct.
Okay, wonderful. I have a question. As a teacher in New Jersey, as an educator, rather, in New Jersey, and I teach history, so we have a mandate to infuse African-American history in our in all of our lessons in terms of history. Are you working with any schools?
Yes, we have many schools that we're involved with. The LEAD School in Philadelphia has adopted our program, as well as the Dessert Club. If you're familiar,
and what is that?
The Dessert Club. It's a D apostrophe Z-E-R-T. It's an organization that mentors or tutors students through the study of African-American history. And they, along with their parents, go to these classes and provide different fundraising events. And at the end of their program, they get to go to Egypt and other parts of Africa to see what their studies have been all about. So they have made made visiting our museum and studying our the lessons that we teach mandatory for their program.
Really, that's great.
Yeah, we're really happy to be associated with the Dessert Club. They do a great job.
And that's in Philly?
They're located in Philadelphia. Yes.
Okay, what about in New Jersey? Are you doing anything in Jersey?
Not as much as we'd like. We've had a few schools from the New Jersey area, mostly colleges and universities. Like Rutgers has come to our museum. We've had Princeton Day School come to our museum. And we also do a traveling slavery museum as well. So if you can't come to us, we bring our collection to you.
Really?
Our traveling collection and set it up in your specific location and provide a presentation along with the exhibit.
Okay, and how far north will you go?
Oh, we've traveled all over the United States and in the Caribbean. We've been as far away as our collection.
Okay,
so there's no limit to where we go. We've been to Boston, Sarasota, Florida, as I said, Bermuda. We have opportunity to go to Texas this summer, so we have calls from all over the United States for our Traveling Slavery Museum.
Okay. That's great.
And by the way, our museum is the only area museum with actual artifacts. My husband has been collecting slavery artifacts for 45 years, and to be able to see items that were used during slavery really brings history alive and make you realize how different coming to America was for enslaved Africans. And our museum is the only museum that you could see these actual artifacts and documents. So I encourage your listening audience to come visit us. You can go on our website to get more information. Again, we're located 3650 Richmond Street, Philadelphia, PA. And our website address is www.lest, that's L-E-S-T, We Forget, museumofslavery.com. And our phone number is 888-886- LEST or 888-886-5378.
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you mention anything about the expression of sugar daddy when you're teaching about enslaved sister?
We do not. Not in the film itself, no.
Okay. I was just wondering because I know a lot of kids aren't aware of that expression or where it...
Why don't you share with the audience the expression?
I was going to ask you if you knew the origin of it.
Not sugar daddy itself. We do, I have run across reference to sugar babies, which were used to refer to our babies that were used as alligator bait.
Alligator, right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right, yeah. Okay, thank you. Are you having a sale at the museum now or a show?
Mm-hmm. We actually are going to be screening the film throughout the holidays, so you'll get an opportunity to not only tour the museum and see a screening of My Slave Sister, Myself, and the Lest We Forget documentary. We're open Wednesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and you need to just call 24 hours in advance to make an appointment because, as I said, we also do traveling tours, so we're not always in town. So if you give us at least 24-hour notice, more than likely, especially during the holidays, we will be able to accommodate you. And you can purchase both films and our booklet at the museum.
All righty. How did you start your interest in filmmaking, or you always had this interest, or how did it start?
Well, it's quite ironic. I'd never started out to be a filmmaker, to be honest with you. However, we were doing a traveling slavery museum in Boston at Boston University, and we met a young man who was a student as well as a student resource teacher there. But he himself had just, you know, gotten his graduate degree, so he was also, you know, much like a student himself there. His name is Domingo Guyton. And Domingo Guyton was just enthralled with the information that my husband and I were sharing, and he was just fascinated by our collection because he had never seen anything like that, because most people haven't. And he told us that he was also a rap artist. He was a rapper. But he only did raps that were religious in nature because he is saved. He used to be a gangbanger in the Boston area. Mm. And by the way, they have a really bad gang problem in Boston. And he said, but he found the Lord. And as a result, he started rapping about what it was like for him to be, you know, saved by understanding and recognizing that he could be saved by the Lord. And he started rapping about Christian raps. He has had his own record label called Hope Records, records spelled with a Z on the end. And he asked, we had talked about the fact, we had shared with him that we wanted to do, because he'd asked us if we had ever thought about doing a videotape of our presentation. I said, well, actually, yes, we had. We were talking about it. He said, well, I can help you with that. He said, because not only do I write lyrics and raps, he says, but I have a friend who also is a filmmaker. His name is Adam Starr, and that's his actual name, Starr with two R's. And he lives in Rhode Island. All of these young men that I'm talking about who eventually became part of our film crew live in the Northeast region or the Rhode Island region. So within months, we got together with Domingo, his partner Epinero, and Adam Starr, and they came to our museum and shot our first documentary, and we were real pleased with it. We thought it came out really well, and one of them sent it off to the Martha's Vineyard Film Festival just on a whim. And we took the opportunity to go to the film festival and have a vacation, gathered up our family, and went there and had an opportunity to see some really great films at the festival. And there were some really heavy hitters there, like Marla Gibbs' daughter, who had done a film, Spike Jones, some other names who I recognized, and we were submitted in the documentary category.
You mean Spike Lee?
I'm sorry?
I said you mean Spike Lee?
No, Spike Jones is the actual name. There's another director called Spike Jones. Okay. He directed a play called I'll Never Go Out with a White Girl Again. And his film is being shown all around the country as well. So, yeah, people often, when I say Spike Jonze, automatically assume I meant Spike Lee, but no, his name is Spike Jonze. So anyway, getting back to the film festival, my husband and I are sitting there, and the kids were getting restless. We had our grandchildren with us, and they were calling off the names of people who had won, and we were just happy to have been acknowledged and be a part of it. So no way in the world that we feel that we could win with, you know, some of the films that we had seen. And all of a sudden, I heard my daughter say, Mommy, Daddy, you guys won. And sure enough, the first time out, we had been nominated or awarded Best Documentary for the HBO Martha's Vineyard Film Festival in 2007.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we were really proud of that fact. So now, inspired, I had already had this idea about doing a film about comparing African-American women with our African slave sisters for a long time. So, buoyed by my experience with the our first win, I put pen to paper and started writing the script. And the guys came down from the Boston area, and 2 days we shot the film. We just released it this past August, and since then it has been selling like a wildfire on our website, as well as screenings that we've been having around the country. And it's just been picked up by the African American Women's Conference that's going to be held in Ghana this this coming December, in the next few weeks.
Mm. Okay.
So we're really excited about the way the public has received our film.
That is phenomenal, Lent.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
And that's how it started. Like I said, I did start out to be a filmmaker. It just happened. But I'm glad to proudly say that I am a filmmaker, and I'm proud of the body of work that we've put out.
So then you write it and somebody else shoots it for you?
Correct. Correct. Okay.
I noticed on your website you have something about Lawnside, New Jersey. Are you very involved in that community as well?
Actually, we've had to close that museum. We were there for a year, but we weren't getting as much traffic as we had hoped. So we closed that and just are putting all of our time and attention in our Anchor Museum, which is the one in Philadelphia at 3650 Richmond Street. It's a much larger facility. The one in Lawnside was a smaller facility that I know Leslie had visited several times, and we were sorry to have to close it because we thought that we would get more support being in, you know, historical Lawnside, but we just
right.
weren't getting the traffic that we had hoped for and just couldn't keep it open any longer.
I see. Okay. Well. Oh, excuse me. I see we have another caller. Oh, hold on. Let me see if the caller has a question about your film.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, caller.
Hello?
Are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, I'm here.
Hello, caller. Is there a question or...
No, I just got on. I don't know what's going on.
Okay, you're just listening. Okay, thank you. You can just hold on, please.
Okay.
So, Gwen?
Yes.
You have a giveaway. Are you giving anything away?
Actually, I have an autographed DVD that I sent to Leslie to give to one of her lucky callers of my new film, My Slave Sister, Myself. So I hope that... whoever wins it will take it home and watch it and then share it with their family and friends.
Well, Ms. Gwen, I thank you for showing up today.
Thank you for having me.
You're doing a great job, and I wanted to give your DVD to the caller who's just online, but I think he got shy. He hung up.
So, oh, okay.
well, what we'll do is we'll continue to listen in, and we have a few people that already won. They called back.
Okay.
On my private line to tell me that they want this, they want that. They're too shy to get on the air, but
okay.
That's how it goes on a live show. But I thank you again for the wonderful work you're doing with the film and the museums. She had two museums, as you stated, one in Philadelphia.
So the one in Lawnside is closed, so we just have the one in Philadelphia. That's our Anchor Museum, 3650
okay.
Richmond Street. Philadelphia, PA, 191.
What are you? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
139.
All right. You have something going on at the museum right now, right?
We actually had a warehouse sale earlier today that is, yes, still going on. We have a warehouse sale of items that include black memorabilia. We have some slave shackles. Most of those have gone to museums or, you know, collectors of those items, as well as vintage comic books, vinyl records, and some furnishings and furniture. So
what can you tell
the area want to stop by our warehouse sale that's going on now.
What can you tell us about some of the people that purchase items from you? You know, can you describe the most typical, you know, person that would come in and purchase these shackles?
Well, they're collectors for the most part. Like I said, the shackles that we sell, the there are two different categories. We have authentic shackles. Those are items that my husband, as I said, has been collecting for the past 35, 40 years, and that can be documented as having been used during slavery because of where he found them, when he found them, and the type of metal that was used to create them that was could be verified from back when they were forged. Then there are reproductions, which there are quite a few reproductions on the market today, or replicas of slave shackles that a lot of people collect, even though they know that they, you know, were not actually used during slavery, but they collect them because of the symbolism. They and these are people who just want to have
get away from there.
Just want to be able to say, I have these shackles, and be able to look at them, touch them, and share them with their family and friends, and say, this is what we were forced to wear when we were brought to America. So it's the symbolism behind them that a lot of people find intriguing.
Interesting. I think we have a caller, Gwen, who may have a question. Uriah, is that you back on? Hello,
Uriah? I think Uriah's trying to win your DVD.
Oh. Well, there's another caller ahead of him, but...
Okay. All right. We'll see if we
Hello?
Can make sure. Oh, there you are. You're right here.
Hello. Yes, ma'am. I have some questions, but I have some trouble getting through. And first of all, you know, I want to barter with the people that you have on the show. This is an awesome show. I didn't get the website for Mrs. Ragdale's site.
All right. I'll give you the website. It's www.lestmuseumofslavery.com.
Okay.
Our phone number is 888-886-5378. Our address is 3650 3650 Richmond Street. That's Richmond Street, Philadelphia, PA. 19139.
Is this information on your website?
Correct. It is.
Okay.
Our hours of operation are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., Wednesday through Sunday, and the admission to our museum is $10 per person.
Okay. I'm in Decatur, Georgia.
Okay.
Right outside of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I did the Oak. It's the Philadelphia Arts and Jazz Festival they had down there. Absolutely phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I think I heard about your museum then.
Okay.
But I was only there for a short amount of time. But I can't wait to see this DVD. And I also mentioned about the barter agreement. Would you be interested in doing that?
A barter?
Yes.
A barter of what? What is your service?
My service is I was on just a little while ago. Talking about Hidden History Publishers historical calendars.
Okay.
You might. So
why don't you send me an email? I'm going to give you my email address.
Okay.
L-E-S-T, lest we forget, museum at yahoo.com.
Okay.
And if you have a website, send me your website address, and I'll check you out.
Okay. All right.
Thank you so much. Enjoy the film.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
We have so, 4 minutes. You know, 4 minutes.
Yeah. Is there another caller? No. Leslie, what were you saying? I thought you had a question.
My phone, I have feedback. I don't know what's going on. But I just wanted to tell Mrs. Ragsdale that I think the two of you and hopefully a few of the people who are also guests on the show will get together. I think we can find different ways to work together and promote each other's different endeavors because everyone needs it, you know. She's in Uriah is in Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
and you're in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
We need to network and get through each state, you know.
Absolutely.
So hopefully. Yeah, and you know what you're doing. You are the matriarch of this whole operation.
Mm-hmm.
Your museum is awesome. It made me sad, but sometimes we need to be sad and, you know, by our history. You know, we have a president, and we're all, you know, full of elation, but at the same time, we need to always remember just how serious and how powerful his election was. By looking back in history and seeing it was just a very short period of time that we were forced to wear those shackles that you were talking about.
Absolutely.
We only have 2 minutes, but I wanted Yvette to hear this because I'm talking to her and she doesn't understand what I'm talking about. Could you talk about the stool, the breeding stool?
Oh, okay. That's in our museum.
Mm-hmm.
It's very innocuous looking piece of apparatus. It's a stool that the women who, this was actually used in Africa, and the women sat on this stool when they were ready to give birth. Just at the time that they felt the baby's head was crowning, they would be put on this stool, and there was a hole at the bottom of the stool where the placenta would fall through, but they would catch the baby ahead, and the midwives would have this woman on the stool, and her legs would be forced open and held open by, you know, the sisters who were helping her. But it was rather crude looking when you think about it. If you've ever had a baby, I mean, you realize how, you know, it's painful enough, but to have to endure sitting on this stool and having your legs forced open like that must have been even, you know, added to your pain. And again, we have that in our museum. We don't know of any other birthing stool that we know of that's on display at any of the other museums in the United States. So when you come to Lest We Forget, you'll see that as well as some other very unique items in our museum that you wouldn't see otherwise in other museums.
Well, the reason why that stuck in my mind so strongly is because when I went to Egypt, I seen a hieroglyphic of the Egyptian women sitting over something similar, but it was like a vase or like a vase.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that apparatus?
Well, it has the same shape. So
right.
It's probably taken from, you know, something that was used back in, you know, our history.
Right. But that was very heavy.
Yeah.
Well, we're down to our last few seconds. Anything you want to say or share with the audience, and you know you'll be back in February.
Well, thank you, Leslie. I really appreciate the opportunity. Again, I encourage you to come visit us at 3650 Richmond Street in Philadelphia. Our phone number is 888-886-5378. Our hours of operation are Wednesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Our website address is www.lest, that's L-E-S-T, we forget, museumofslavery.com. And if you want to drop me an email, our email address is lestweforgetmuseum@yahoo.com.
All right. Well, that's the first half of our show is finished. The second half will continue. Just call back the same number that you called to listen to this show, and we'll be on in about 10 seconds for the second half. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so
much.
Have a good holiday.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.